A jagged flash of golden light zigzags across a silver sphere. The logo of Touchstone Pictures. A drop of liquid dimples a pool of dark water, forming a word beneath its rippling surface. The logo of Imagine Entertainment. An underground train flashes through a tunnel. Touchstone Pictures and Imagine Entertainment present a Brian Glazer production. Jodie Foster, Flight Plan. The yellow underground train pulls up at a station and the doors open. It's empty. No one gets on or off. A woman in her late 30s sitting on the platform on a mesh metal seat stares at the train, her blue eyes wet and full of trepidation. Behind her on the pristine tiles, a wall sign says, Alexanderplatz. A door opens and the same woman steps into a morgue where a casket stands open. The mortuary director comes towards her. He asks her, would you like a moment of privacy before the casket is sealed? She nods, clinging desperately to her self-control, her breathing quick and shallow. The mortuary director leaves.
Honey?
Back on the underground platform, a man in a dark coat offers the woman his hand. As she looks up, her pale, angular face, framed by sleek, collar-length blonde hair, brightens for a moment, and a hopeful smile flickers across her thin lips. She looks cautiously at the man's gloved hand and stands. He leads her onto a waiting train. With Peter Sarsgaard, Erica Christensen, Kate Bean, Greta Scarkey, Judith Scott and Sean Bean, Michael Irby, Brent Sexton. Back in the mortuary, the woman steps towards the casket. Some sort of fluid drains through a thin plastic pipe onto the floor. The woman steels herself to look at the body inside. Marlene Lawston, Stephanie Farrisee, Forrest Landis. Casting by Deborah Aquila, CSA, and Trisha Wood, CSA, Jennifer Smith. Music composed by James Horner. At a station further along the line, the train pulls away into the tunnel. Together, the man and woman walk up the steps to the street. It's dark outside and has been snowing. The roads and pavements are mostly clear, but thicker drifts of snow lie in the gutters. Back at the mortuary, the woman opens a connecting door. The shaven-headed mortuary director is right outside. You need to enter your code now.
Is that really necessary?
I'm afraid so. International law forbids the shipping of an unsecured casket. The woman braces herself.
David, could we just sit in the courtyard for a minute? Just a minute.
David, halfway up the stairs of a dimly lit apartment block, turns back.
Sure.
He smiles. They step out into the dark courtyard, where there's a bench and a tree. David sweeps a thick covering of snow off the bench in the middle of the courtyard. The woman looks up. A roost of crows flaps away from the branches above her head. In the morgue, the director walks towards the casket. We did all we could, but there was some trauma to your husband's head from the fall. He closes the lid on David's body. In the snowy courtyard, the woman gazes up into the darkness. David's umbrella is propped by the bench, but she's alone. And only one set of footprints leads out from the courtyard door. Luminous shapes like a squadron of aeroplanes appear to fly across the walls of a bedroom, projected from a child's nightlight. The woman lies on the bed next to her sleeping child. She strokes the little girl's cheek. The woman looks up at the noise. She goes to one of the gauze-covered windows and shuts it. From a building across the courtyard, she sees two men observing her.
Mommy? What, sweetie?
Where's my room gonna be?
Well, I thought we'd share a room for a while. Would you like that? My old room from when I was a kid?
The little girl nods. The woman tucks her up.
I need to go back to sleep. You have a big day tomorrow.
The child's mother looks over at the window and gets up. She looks across the courtyard. The window opposite is empty. She draws the curtains. From the building opposite, she can be seen moving from the little girl's room and going into a larger room stacked with cardboard removal boxes, where she takes a handful of pills from a bottle. The photo ID tag on the handbag at her side says Elgin, Kyle Pratt. Kyle puts the pills in the bag, picks it up, and leaves the room. Day breaks, and outside the apartment building, snow falls. Kyle struggles down the stairwell, six bags slung over her shoulders.
You doing okay, Jules?
The little girl appears.
Uh-huh.
We're almost there, sweetie. Come on.
Julia, carrying a child's rucksack and a teddy bear, and wearing a coat and thick blue tights, follows her mother down to the hallway, but stops a few steps from the bottom.
Mommy? I don't want to go out there.
The girl's large eyes blink solemnly. Kyle glances out at the snow.
It's okay, honey, I promise.
I'm scared.
Kyle puts all her bags on the floor. She comes up to Julia.
Hey, what if I hit you? Now, would that be okay? On my shoulder or under my coat?
The whole way?
Kyle smiles encouragingly. Moments later, she struggles out to a waiting taxi, a small pair of feet sticking out from under her coat. The taxi driver opens the car boot. Kyle helps Julia into the back seat, and the taxi driver returns with the last of the bags. Kyle straps Julia in. The girl plays with her teddy bear.
What kind of food do they have?
On the airplane?
In America, Grandma and Grandpa.
The best.
Do they have toast?
Of course.
Julia smiles happily. The taxi driver glances at Kyle in his mirror. In the terminal, Kyle, her hair neatly combed back in a French pleat, studies the departure board. Every flight is delayed or cancelled. The New York flight says delayed.
Welcome to Berlin International Airport. Please do not leave your luggage unattended. Unattended luggage is subject to collection and search by airport police. Thank you for your cooperation.
Kyle is still looking at the board as armed police walk past her, patrolling the thronging departure hall. She glances round for Julia. The little girl is nowhere to be seen.
Julia? Julia?
Kyle's eyes fill with panic, and she turns this way and that, straining to see through the bustle of travellers. She grabs her trolley and pushes her way through the crowds. She stops and looks around again, and finally sees her. Julia, in a navy blue pinafore frock and a white patterned blouse, is looking at sweets in a shop display. Kyle pushes the trolley towards her at a run, and grabs her by the shoulders.
Julia, how many times do I have to tell you not to wander away from me in public places? Huh? How many times?
I was hungry.
Honey, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You scared me to... Look, you really worried me.
Sorry.
Kyle shuts her eyes for a second.
Okay. Right, what kind of snack do you want? Huh?
She wipes a hand over her forehead.
You want this one?
It's so big.
It's the biggest.
What kind is it, Mom?
It's
It's an E-474. It's brand new.
Did you make it?
See those huge engines? Mommy helps make them work.
Julia gazes out of the window.
Those men could fall.
Two men high up in a hydraulic cradle are spraying de-icer on the huge aircraft's wing.
Don't worry, honey. They're not gonna fall.
But they could.
Kyle darts a concerned look at her daughter.
Passengers for small children, please proceed to gate 8.
Okay, that's us. Ready?
Kyle carries Julia down the boarding ramp to the door of the plane.
Can I hold my own ticket?
Sure. And carry it until we get on the plane, okay?
A smiling face appears on a TV screen.
欢迎您登机，欢迎来到Alto Airlines.
The Chinese woman morphs into an Italian man, also in the uniform of Alto Airlines. The video is playing on the headrest TV screens of every seat on the aircraft. The plane is a double-decker, and in the vast, empty upper passenger cabin, Kyle and Julia walk down the right-hand aisle, looking for their seats.
26 and on the right hand side. Yeah, there we go. Right here.
Julia sits by the window, dwarfed by the deep, high backed seat. Kyle stows her hand luggage and sits in the aisle seat. There's an empty seat between them. As a family with a squabbling son and daughter come on board, Julia finds a tiny metal aeroplane down by her seat. She sits on the floor looking at it.
Stop, wait, stop, no pushing.
That's a plane. Didn't even
take
me.
Completely moving, please.
There were candy.
I'm holding on to it. That's it.
Here we go. All right,
so 25. Bob, do you see what's going on here with your kids?
How are we gonna work this out? Guys, stop.
Dad, why does she get everything all the time?
Because we like her a lot more.
I want you to calm down, okay?
The boy throws his coat.
Calm down.
Enjoy your flight.
In the spacious first class cabin, passengers are directed to their seats.
Hi, I'm up on board. Right this way.
Thank you.
No. Okay. No laptop. Not right now.
The noisy family are just in front of Kyle. Passengers of all nationalities find their seats. The two children, Rhett and Brittany, are fighting with the small head cushions.
Guys, you hold your mouth. That's nice. Hey, Rhett. Thank you, guys.
A passenger behind Kyle looks around for assistance.
Excuse me.
Thank you, ma'am.
A flight attendant, Stephanie, comes up to him.
I've got two questions for you. What are the movies? And how loud do these headphones go?
Stephanie smiles.
Never quite loud enough.
I wish you guys would do that with bricks once in a while. That way it would end fast.
Ha! Tagged you again!
Those empty seats in the back are starting to look pretty attractive.
The man smiles at Kyle as she glances over her shoulder.
Thank you, guys. Stop it, guys!
In the galley...
Hi, Stephanie.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah, I'm sorry, right here by the window.
Could be some high maintenance in row 25.
I heard him.
Yeah, I think the people two planes away heard them.
Would somebody tell the new kid it's okay to laugh about the passengers?
Sweetheart, it's okay to hate the passengers.
They've just shut down Frankfurt.
Thank God we aren't going to Frankfurt.
We may not be going anywhere.
Captain Rich grins at his co-pilot, Kaufman, and glances at the portside cockpit window as a high-pressure hose plays over the glass. Outside, the two men in the hydraulic cradle work the hose methodically down the port side of the fuselage.
Ladies and gentlemen, we apologize once again for the delay this evening and should be taking off shortly.
Stephanie walks down an aisle, counting the passengers with a clicker. Julia sits up with a start as the pressure hose hits her window. The mother of the two noisy children glances anxiously at her husband.
Bob, what was that?
I don't know. Sure, it's nothing to worry about.
Kyle leans over to reassure Julia.
They have to neck the ice off, or the air won't pass over the wing properly.
Julia looks back at the porthole. As the water clears, the lights of an airport tractor approach the aircraft, towing three freight trolleys. Kyle unbuckles her seatbelt, looks over Julia's shoulder and puts a protective arm around her. On the first trolley is the black casket. Julia stares as it disappears below the plane.
You just sleep, honey. And when you wake up, we'll be somewhere else. We'll be in New York.
Julia still stares.
Daddy too?
Yeah. Daddy too.
Julia leans forward and blows on the glass of the window, making it mist up. Then with her finger, draws a small heart shape in the condensation. As the little girl settles back down in her seat, Kyle stares at the heart as if her own would break. The flight attendants prepare for takeoff. One rolls down the safety shutter at the top of the staircase between the upper and lower first class decks. Another straps herself into a seat in the galley behind the first class bar. In coach class, Kyle helps Julia strap herself in. In front of her, the two children sitting with their father are still fighting. Their mother, very nervous, sits just across the aisle in the four-seat center section.
I love this part.
The aircraft powers down the runway. Throughout the plane, the lights are dimmed for takeoff. In the freight hold, containers strain with the acceleration. The black casket is strapped to the floor at the very front of the hold. With a bump, the aircraft leaves the runway. The nervous mother is opening a sick bag.
You okay? You want me to get scared?
Behind them, Kyle turns to her long-haired daughter.
Hey, how'd you like a whole row to yourself, huh?
Huh?
The last couple of rows are empty. We can take a few seats and we can stretch out. Would you like that?
Julia purses her lips and nods, her face solemn. Kyle reaches over and runs the back of her fingers across her daughter's forehead. The little girl's sad, dark eyes, framed by long, dark lashes, turn away, her thoughts elsewhere. Kyle strokes her cheek. The aircraft flies on over the twinkling lights of Germany far below. The cabin lights are dimmed. In the center block of four seats at the back of the upper coach deck, Kyle lies fast asleep, her head on a pillow. She wakes as the aircraft hits a pocket of turbulence. Her eyes open, flitting round, disoriented.
I have to go to sleep.
She looks at the three seats across the aisle. They're empty. She looks down the dimly lit aisle towards where they originally sat, then gets up and looks behind at the spiral staircase leading to the lower coach deck. She starts to walk down the aisle and comes to their original seats. They too are empty.
Hey, you watching this movie?
She turns.
No.
It's not too funny. Of course, at 36,000 feet, you can't just up and walk out of the theater, can you?
Did you happen to see a little girl go by here?
No, sure didn't.
My daughter. Oh, how long have we been flying?
3 hours, maybe a little more.
Kyle frowns, nods to the video-watching insomniac and sets off down the aisle towards the toilet cubicles. She opens the first one she comes to. It's empty. She checks the other three cubicles. Kyle walks through to the next compartment, checking each row. She arrives in the galley behind the first-class bar and lounge. Fiona, the new flight attendant, looks up from her trolley.
Can I help you?
I'm looking for my daughter.
There's a girl in the lounge. Could that be her?
Yeah, thank you.
A red-headed girl of about 10 pushes through from the lounge and past Kyle.
No, she's six, my daughter. You probably saw us. I was carrying her aboard.
Fiona nods uncertainly.
Of course. Yes, she hasn't been up here. Sorry.
Kyle strides through the bar and pulls back the curtain to one of the first-class compartments. A flight attendant, Estelle, ushers her out. She turns back to Fiona.
Excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry. She has sandy hair and it's in a ponytail, and she's probably carrying a chenille bear with one arm.
Fiona nods automatically.
She probably just found a couple kids to play with.
Fiona watches as Kyle, her blue eyes now beginning to widen in panic, turns away. She follows her to the top of the staircase and watches as Kyle, breathing rapidly, goes down to the main coach deck. Kyle hurries through the dimly lit, crowded cabin.
Here you go, ma'am.
Excuse me.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it.
Excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. Would you mind using the other eye?
I'm just looking for my daughter.
Well, she can't have gone too far.
Fine, I'll go around.
The flight attendants carry on.
Your juice?
Thank you.
Exchanging a smug glance.
Thanks so much.
Kyle continues her search of the lower deck. She peers into each row.
Pardon me?
And checks the lavatories. They're all empty. Kyle runs up the spiral staircase at the back of the plane and searches the blankets on the seats where Julia was sleeping. She finds the teddy bear. She hurries down the aisle to the seats they originally sat in. Julia isn't there. The woman in the seat behind looks up and takes off her headphones.
Is something wrong?
I'm looking for my daughter. Have you seen her by any chance walking by or?
I don't think so. How old is she?
She's 6.
No, I never saw her.
As Kyle turns to go, Stephanie comes up.
Can I help you, ma'am?
Moments later, Stephanie picks up a microphone.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we've got a first to report. Seems our aircraft is big enough to lose a child in. Her name is Julia Pratt, 6 years old. She's wearing a navy blue jumper. If she's anywhere near you or perhaps playing with one of your kids, please press the call button now. We've got an anxious mom up here. Thank you.
The message is relayed in every set of headphones and every compartment, including the cockpit. The co-pilot, Kaufman, grins at Captain Ridge.
All children should have to wear a cowbell.
Ridge switches off the tannoy. In the flight attendant's station, Kyle looks at an illuminated seating plan of the two decks.
Someone must have seen her.
Estelle comes in.
Any tapers?
We've got to search the plane, and I don't know how to organize that.
Miss Pratt, I am sure she's perfectly okay.
No. No, she's not. If she's been through something, she's not herself right now.
The flight attendants exchange glances.
Can we get the seatbelt signs on? Or?
You know, I think we're getting ahead of ourselves.
There's 9 closets on this plane, right? There's 4 up, and there's 5 down. And nobody's checked any of them. There's 7 galleys, there's the crew quarters, there's the holds, and kids can find places like that. I just need the aisles clear so I can look, okay?
Estelle nods.
Okay. I'm gonna have to ask you to go back to your seat. But I tell you what, I will personally go and speak to the captain and see if he can step away from the flight deck, all right?
Kyle sits on the arm of a seat opposite where she was originally sitting. Fiona is standing close by.
Are you in the airline business? Huh? You seem to know aircraft design.
Yeah, I'm a propulsion engineer. I work for Elgin Air. I just left.
Based in Berlin?
Kyle looks up at Fiona.
Look, I know you're just trying to keep me calm. But the problem is not that I'm anxious. All right, the problem is that my daughter is missing and nobody can tell me where the hell she is.
Fiona averts her eyes uneasily. Kyle bows her head, her face wound like a spring.
I'm sorry. Do you have any kids?
Do nieces count?
Yeah, almost.
Fiona smiles and nods ruefully.
They hate playing hide and seek with me because I always find them. So, fear not.
Rhett and Brittany turn round and peep over the top of their seats.
Did you guys see my little girl?
Rhett shakes his head. The father turns round.
You're the one that made the announcement about.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you had a kid with you. Did you, honey?
Sorry, I didn't.
I maybe you guys could help me look for her.
Cool.
Awesome. I'm so bored.
Sorry. No.
Why not? Dad, she's lost.
How lost can she be? We're in a tube. Turn around.
Fiona goes back up to Kyle.
I'm sure the captain will be here any minute.
Stephanie appears out of the flight attendant's area behind the spiral staircase and catches Fiona's eye.
Excuse me. I'll be right back.
Fiona and Stephanie whisper. The man in the row behind Kyle looks up at her.
Engineer, huh?
You check this one. Yeah.
You're the one who came up with the five across Ceta?
But Kyle has seen Stephanie and Fiona move out of sight. She hurries towards the back of the plane.
That's weird.
Stephanie is on the phone.
Miss Pratt.
What's wrong? What's happening? Everything in New York, Kennedy.
Who's she talking to?
We're trying to get to the bottom of this.
Is she all right? Did something happen to her?
She's hurt. Okay.
Do you know where my daughter is? What are you telling me? What aren't you telling me? Say it!
Stephanie puts the phone back on its cradle.
Miss Pratt. I'm sorry, but I don't think that she's here.
What?
We don't... Ma'am, we don't have any record of your daughter ever having been on board.
What are you talking about?
Well, that was the departure gate in Berlin, and they say that they never checked Julia Pratt onto this plane.
Of course they did. She was right next to me. We were the first two passengers on the plane. We must have walked right past you.
Fiona.
Ma'am, this is our passenger manifest. Your daughter isn't on it.
We walked right past you. 26, row 26. I put her in the seat next to me, 26A.
The manifest list 26A is unoccupied, and I did the head count myself. I checked each seat.
So you missed one. What does that have to do with finding her now?
Stephanie looks back at Kyle with guarded neutrality.
Would you like to see your boarding pass?
If you wouldn't mind.
I put it right in my pocket.
She reaches into the pocket of her black slacks and brings out a single boarding pass.
I put both boarding passes in my pocket.
She pushes past Fiona, up the aisle to her seat, opens the overhead locker, and looks through their belongings.
Backpacks, mister.
Stephanie and Fiona look round anxiously at the reaction of the other passengers.
She couldn't have reached up there by herself. She's not tall enough.
She jumps down.
Somebody has her.
That's quite an assumption, Miss Pratt.
But how else could her stuff disappear? Can you think of another way? I have to talk to the captain.
I can ask him, ma'am, but I can't guarantee that he'll see.
People do things to little girls, sick things. You know that. I need to talk to the captain.
She races off down the aisle. Passengers look startled. Stephanie catches up with her in the bar.
Go back to your seat. Someone has my daughter. Do you understand?
She runs off.
Hey!
And bangs on the flight deck door.
Captain, I have to speak to you.
Behavior's constituting a threat to the safety of this aircraft.
I'm not a threat. I need to speak to
I'm an air marshal. Can I let you go?
Yes.
He lets her go. It's the man who was sitting in the row behind her.
Jane Carson. Are you hurt?
I just need to see the captain.
I understand. But that's his call, not yours.
He ushers her away from the door.
All clear, Captain.
Later in the first-class galley, the captain looks at Julia's passport.
The departure gate had no record of her.
No, sir. I had him double-check.
Stephanie.
And there's no boarding pass.
There was, but it was taken from me.
Estelle, the first-class flight attendant, Fiona, and Carson, the marshal, are also in the galley.
You were working the entry door, is that right?
Yes, Captain.
Did you see the girl?
I don't...
Fiona shoots a look at Kyle, then looks away.
I don't remember either way, sir. Sir, I did the count myself. 26A was empty.
Fiona glances at Stephanie.
Did you tell him about the bear?
The bear?
Yeah, her teddy bear. It was under her blanket, and she would have never walked away without it.
Have you had anything to drink on this flight, Miss Pratt? Anything alcoholic at all?
No.
Are you under any medication right now?
I have a couple of sleeping pills with me, just like every other passenger on board.
Kyle's eyes waver.
And I'm carrying Klonopin. For anxiety, I took two this morning.
I see. How long have you been on them?
I'm not on them.
How long?
I filled the prescription a week ago. When my husband died. My daughter and I are bringing his body back to Long Island for burial.
There is a casket in the hold, sir. Paperwork's from Kaiser Wilhelm Hospital on Hochstrasse.
He fell 6 days ago from the rooftop building.
Captain Rich glances at Carson, who returns his gaze without expression. Rich looks back at Kyle, then turns to the flight attendants.
Does anybody on board remember seeing her? Passengers in her row?
No one has said so, sir. There are 32 children listed on the manifest, and they've all been accounted for.
The captain rubs a finger across his forehead and turns to the air marshal.
You were seated near her, Mr. Carson. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Did you see her?
Carson looks at Kyle and slowly shakes his head.
No, I didn't.
Think about what you're suggesting, Captain. You're suggesting that I imagined bringing her on board, and that I am now pretending to look for her. Does that make any sense to you? Can you think of a reason why I would do that? I'm not drunk, I'm not loaded, I'm not looking for attention. There are protocols about these things. Post 9/11, if a pilot finds that he has an inaccurate passenger manifest, he's supposed to land the plane immediately.
A teddy bear does not constitute an inaccurate passenger manifest.
But I'm telling you that it's inaccurate, and that means that you have to search the plane from nose to tail, just like you would if it was your own child that was missing. This child is only 6 years old. She's not in very good shape right now. She's scared of everything. I had to put her under my coat today just to get her in the car. But she did get in that car. She got on this plane just like every other person here. And I fell asleep, which I should never have done. But she was right next to me. I was holding her hand when we took off. Please. You gotta help her.
Stephanie and Carson watch the captain with expressions of professional inscrutability. Only he shows any emotion. He looks at Kyle uneasily. He takes a deep breath.
Get the lights up. Get every passenger seated. No one in the toilets, no exception. Look for her backpack, her boarding pass.
Check every closet, every bin.
He turns back to Kyle.
Are there any more questions?
Thank you.
Stephanie purses her lips dubiously.
Thank you.
All three flight attendants exchange glances, then go about their tasks.
Ladies and gentlemen, we apologize for the inconvenience, but the captain has turned on the seatbelt sign and requests that all passengers return to their seats with their seatbelts securely fastened.
Turn off the no seatbelt sign in a minute. Yes, thank you. Can we just fasten that seatbelt, please, ma'am? Thank you. Yes, just give us a second, please.
A man in business class comments to his neighbor.
Don't see what all the fuss is about. It's not like she lost a palm pilot.
Flight attendants check all the overhead lockers. Fiona and Stephanie check the clothes closets in business class.
A 6-year-old girl. Climbing into avionics.
Stephanie opens a hatch in the closet floor.
This is really silly.
The captain appears.
This is procedure.
Captain.
With a dry glance, she climbs down through the hatch carrying a torch. Kyle and Carson glance at her as they pass by. Stephanie descends the ladder into the avionics compartment.
Anybody in here?
She shines her torch around.
Hello?
In the front of the aircraft, avionics is 2 stories high, sealed off from the cargo hold by a reinforced bulkhead. Stephanie shines her torch through the steel mesh floor into the lower section, then searches an area where 6 tall cabinets stand in a circle, blinking with blue and red lights. Ahead of her is a section of flat deck, which drops down into the narrow nose cone. Stephanie flashes her torch briefly into the nose cone. Upstairs in coach class.
Miss, you really need to use the restroom?
As soon as the captain's turned off the seatbelt sign, sir.
No, I don't need an escort.
Carson follows Kyle.
I'm responsible for anything that might become a threat to the safety of this flight.
This is absurd. What's going on here?
Stay in your seat.
Women with imaginary children qualify.
A man with a moustache comes down the spiral staircase.
Sir, I'm going to have to ask you to return to your seat.
My back gets stiff if I sit for too long.
I am sorry. I'm very sorry, but the captain has requested that all passengers remain in their seats.
The man glares as he turns back.
Running out of magazines up here.
Kyle searches the upper coach deck again.
Tell me something. What are you going to do when we find her? How are you going to explain yourself? He says it's not so bad if she's lost. And you just look lazy. What if somebody took her?
She looks under each row of seats.
A crime was committed on this flight, and the only law enforcement official on board didn't do a damn thing about it. How's that gonna look?
You made your point.
He nods, tight-lipped, as the passengers round about turn to look, his boyish face taut with controlled anger. Kyle turns back to her search. Eric, a flight attendant, takes a torch. He unlocks a hatch above an upper bunk in a crew rest area and crawls in, shining the torch around the shallow curve of the aircraft's attic.
Katerina!
What?
You should have a look.
Why? Did you see something?
No. It's just that I'm down to watch you crawl through that hatch.
In the upper coach deck, Kyle checks under the seat, where a young, bearded, Middle Eastern-looking man is sitting, then moves on. She turns back.
What's the problem?
She pushes past Kyle back to the bearded man.
May I help you?
Do I know you from somewhere?
You've walked past me 5 times since we took off. Does that count?
Are you from Berlin?
Am I being interrogated now?
I just asked you if you're from Berlin.
No. I am not. Let's go.
Carson guides Kyle away.
What's that all about?
The bearded man glances at a clean-shaven young Arab sitting by the window next to him, then turns and looks at 2 other Arabs in the center block, 1 row behind him.
Think about what you're saying now, too. It would be epic.
You're terrible.
Smiling, Eric and Katerina climb down from the attic right in front of Kyle and Carson.
My daughter. You were looking for my daughter? I need to speak to the captain again.
She picks up a phone.
Can you get him on the phone for me, please?
Captain Rich appears.
Okay, can we look in the holds now?
He glances round the rest area.
Miss Pratt, there is no conceivable way a child could have gained access to any of the holds.
There's access to the forward holds from main galley number 2.
The call button is too high for a 6-year-old to reach.
So is the overhead bin, but her backpack is missing. She's with an adult, I told you
that. What adult? Every single passenger is in his seat, accounted
for. The passenger manifest is inaccurate. It is not inaccurate. You've got to search the holds now!
I'm sorry, Miss Pratt. I'm afraid I can't allow that. Excuse me.
God damn it, are you listening?
Furious, he turns back towards her. Carson intervenes.
Wait. I don't think it's such a bad idea, Captain.
What?
It might be good to have her below deck for a while. She is making the passengers anxious. Obviously, I would go down with her.
Mr. Carson, I am responsible for the safety of every passenger on this plane, even the delusional ones.
No,
and I will not have a passenger out of her seat, bouncing around with the luggage bins in a cargo hold. Any turbulence, and you could be seriously injured. And so could you, by the way, Mr. Carson. Now, we are going to continue to search this aircraft from the waist upwards. If we don't find anybody, I will send 2 members of my crew down into the holds.
I just saw 2 members of your crew coming back from the attic, and they did everything up there except look for my daughter.
Miss Pratt, there are 425 passengers on this flight. Who are not receiving any attention at the moment, because every one of my flight attendants are looking for a child that none of them believe was ever on board. If you think we could be doing more to meet your needs, then I suggest you take it up with customer service after we land.
Captain, can I speak to you for a moment?
Stephanie has a sheet of paper.
Mr. Carson, this woman is in your charge. I want her to remain in the passenger cabin. Is that understood?
Understood.
Do excuse me.
As the captain goes with Stephanie, Carson watches him resentfully. Kyle's despondent face comes into sharp focus, her eyes widening in sudden recall.
I know I've seen him before.
Hey!
She runs up the aisle toward the bearded Arab. His younger companion jumps up defensively.
I know I've seen you before!
The bearded Arab stands as Carson chases Kyle up the aisle.
What?
Where's my daughter?
I don't know what you're talking
about.
You
were looking through a window last night. I saw you across the courtyard staring into my daughter's room, both of them.
You are a lunatic.
Where's Julia?
Hold it.
Carson.
Back up. Have you seen these men before?
Yes.
No. She has not.
I saw them last night staring into my daughter's room.
This is crazy.
Shh, quiet. Listen.
Something's wrong with those guys. Is this correct, sir?
I have never seen this woman before in my life.
Neither have I.
What'd you expect them to say? You got me?
Exactly. Shouldn't we move this to one of the galleys?
Why should I have to move? I didn't do anything. I've never even seen this woman before.
Where'd you take my little girl?
Aren't you listening? I have never seen her.
He looks around at the other passengers, the heavy man with the moustache, who said what you expect him to say, is halfway out of his seat.
I don't trust him.
The bearded Arab turns to Carson.
Not that it's any of your concern, but I was at the Hilton last night in Tiergarten on business. We both were. And neither of us left the hotel.
He moistens his lips.
Would you like to see our bill?
It's a bit unorthodox, but if you wouldn't mind.
Carson is standing with his back to the toilets, and as the man squats to open his bag, Carson puts a hand on the marshal's gun he carries in the back of his waistband.
When I travel with my children, I have an eye on them at all times. I don't lose them and blame somebody else.
Passengers crane their heads to watch. The atmosphere is tense. Fiona has placed herself close to Elias, the indignant American with the moustache, and is blocking the aisle. Eric and Katerina are close by. The bearded Middle Eastern man hands Carson a bill from the Hilton, made out in the name of Abayad, which lists local phone calls and hotel rental movies.
Satisfied.
A bill doesn't prove anything.
Elias appeals to the other passengers.
Satisfied.
Are you allowed to talk to you like that?
Sir?
Fiona puts out a restraining hand. Kyle is drawing quick, shallow breaths. Carson hands back the bill.
Let's go.
No, where's my daughter?
I spent the night watching a movie, you crazy pussy!
Kyle jumps on him. Carson pulls her off.
Where's my daughter?
Get a hand along this lady, will you?
Fiona is knocked over.
It's okay. I'm okay. It's okay.
Is that the lady with the kid?
Yeah.
Eric helps Fiona up.
Anyone else? Have any questions for me?
Obeyed is trembling with indignation and anger.
Then I guess you'll have to find a few other Arabs to harass.
Son of a bitch!
Sir! We're gonna take our seats now. All of us. Right?
Eric restrains Elias with a firm hand, then looks across at Obeyed on the lower deck.
I can cuff you, understand that? I can confine you to your seat.
Vicka, Julia, why would you want to cuff me?
Sorry. I had a 7-year-old who couldn't hold his pee any longer.
0.6, almost wet himself. Okay. I think those men were surveilling you last night, is that it?
Yes.
For the purposes of kidnapping your daughter, stashing her in one of the holds until we land?
Yes.
Okay, mind if I ask you an obvious question? If they knew where you lived, why wouldn't they just take her from your apartment? Why take her on an airplane with no possible means of escape?
I don't know.
And let's not forget, her name isn't on the manifest. How the hell could two passengers pull that off?
Obviously, they'd have to have somebody from the crew involved.
Jesus.
He pushes her into a steward's galley.
Think about what you're asking me to do, okay? You're asking me to approach two Arabs on an airplane and accuse them of a criminal conspiracy.
They've got my daughter. I don't give a shit about being politically incorrect.
Fine. Let's go arrest both of them. Just as soon as you can answer me one more question. Why would anyone want to take your daughter? What makes her so special? What makes you so special?
Kyle's eyes fill with absolute certainty.
I know the plane.
She looks behind her.
That's what this is all about. They picked me?
They picked you. For what?
I don't know what yet. I think they're hijacking the plane. I think my daughter's a hostage.
You know what? Your husband's death is starting to make a lot more sense to me. A couple more hours and even I'm ready to jump.
Kyle looks at him as though she's been slapped, then lowers her eyes, her face full of pain.
He fell. David fell.
Sure did.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. The captain has turned off the seatbelt sign. You are now free to move.
What's he doing?
Kyle looks out onto the lower deck. She hurries down the aisle, crowded with people making for the toilets, and heads for the upper coach deck. The two Arabs in the center block are talking, but Abayad and his companion are not in their seats. Kyle pushes through the queue by the toilets.
Hey.
Excuse me.
Captain Rich comes towards her.
I need to speak to you.
Are we done looking? Is that it?
If you would just come with me.
No, I'm not going anywhere. You understand that?
We are not going to discuss this in the middle of the cabin.
Where's my daughter?
If you come with
where
me...
Where is she? Where
She's
is
dead,
she?
Dead, goddammit!
Kyle's eyes widen. She chokes and shakes her head.
You found her.
No, I didn't find her, Miss Pratt.
Kyle looks at him uncomprehendingly. He leads her away to a crew area where Stephanie is standing with the sheet of paper. He takes the paper off her and turns to Kyle.
This is from Kaiser Wilhelm Hospital on Hochstrasse. That's where your husband was pronounced dead, is that correct?
Yes.
Your daughter was also taken there.
No. She wasn't there when it happened. She was with the nanny.
Miss Pratt, according to the director at the morgue there, your daughter, Julia, died of internal injuries at 2:36 p.m. He took her with him off that roof, didn't he?
No, no. Julia wasn't even there. She was at the park. She was at the park. She wasn't even there. She wasn't even there.
Flashbacks show Kyle crossing to the taxi and looking around the airport for her daughter. Kyle looks around the rest area at the captain, Stephanie, Estelle, Fiona, and Carson.
You're crazy. We're all crazy.
She was never on board.
No. I carried her on board.
Miss Pratt, I can't tell you how sorry I am.
You mustn't be so scared.
But my main responsibility is the safety of these passengers. And I can't allow anyone, no matter how tragic their circumstances, to jeopardize that.
She didn't know where she was.
Our air marshal is going to escort you back to your seat. Mr. Carson, would you take her back to her seat now?
Carson lays a gentle hand on Carl's shoulder as Captain Rich heads back to the cockpit. But in the narrow passage between the lavatories, she breaks from him, pushes past a passenger, and runs. Obeyed steps from his seat, grabs her and throws her to the floor. She smashes her cheek on the arm of the seat. Kyle lies on her back, stunned, a livid red mark on her cheek. The picture fades to black. When she comes round, she's slumped in the window seat of row 26A. Rhett and Brittany are kneeling up in their seats and peering over their headrests at her with impassive curiosity. Carson watches her from a seat across the aisle. Next to her is a woman with dark hair and spectacles.
How are you feeling?
Kyle tries to focus her eyes.
Are you in pain?
We can get you some aspirin if you want.
Kids, turn around. Turn around. Turn around.
The cabin lights have been dimmed again, dotted here and there with individual reading lights. The woman, who's about 40, looks at Kyle with compassion.
The captain thought you might want to talk with me. I'm a therapist. My seat's just a few rows up. And I asked if I might be able to help.
I don't know you.
So many of my patients come to me after a loss. To grieve. Sometimes it's just stopping. Allowing the pain to come. Your husband, David. Can you tell me about him?
I don't know you.
Kyle draws back and turns her eyes away.
Was he very unhappy?
Her eyes are red and filmed with tears. She gives a barely perceptible nod.
Yes. He was unhappy.
The woman nods.
I didn't know. He didn't talk about it like that.
I understand.
Slowly, Kyle sits forward, looking at the woman with a piercing intensity.
Last night, I walked through the city. And he was with me. He was there.
Was Julia there too?
She was waiting for me at home.
She was happy to see you.
A heartbroken smile tugs at the corners of Carl's mouth.
She said she couldn't sleep. So I got into bed with her. And lay there. Until she closed her eyes.
With an encouraging nod and smile, the woman removes her glasses.
When something's too overwhelming, too painful. We deny it. We choose to believe something else. So you can walk with David and get on a plane with Julia.
Oh.
It feels better than the truth.
Kyle rocks and shakes her head.
So much better.
The woman smiles sympathetically, then glances down.
But it's impossible to move on if we haven't accepted, if we haven't grieved.
Kyle's stricken face passes for a moment through the beam of a reading light as she turns to the window.
Sometimes it helps to think of an image. You could imagine your husband and daughter on an island, a beautiful place. They'll always be there. And you can swim to them anytime you need to.
Kyle's breath mists the porthole window, and there, quite distinct on the glass, is the small heart shape she remembers Julia making. Her eyes, which had lapsed into quiescent grief under the woman's soothing words, flicker as she traces a line next to the heart with her own finger. She turns back to the woman watchfully and swallows, carefully bringing her own features under control.
Am I allowed to go to the restroom?
The woman studies her carefully.
I just need to be alone. I don't know where else to go.
The woman replaces her glasses with a satisfied smile.
This is a very good idea.
She turns to Carson.
She needs a moment on her own.
The woman gets out of her seat.
Is she any kind of threat to herself?
No, of course not.
Did she take her belt and shoelaces or something?
No, she's going to be fine. She's going to be fine. Won't you?
She offers Kyle her hand.
You're going to be fine.
Carson stands and leads Kyle, whose hands are handcuffed, towards the toilets. Stephanie, carrying jugs of coffee and tea, squeezes past them with professional detachment.
Excuse me.
There are four toilets on either side of the narrow passageway. Kyle walks past the first one, even though it's vacant, and stops by the last, holding up her wrists to Carson. Fiona and another flight attendant squeeze past.
Pardon me?
Excuse me?
Sure.
Kyle watches Carson's face carefully as he undoes the handcuffs.
I'll be waiting right here.
Inside the toilet, she strips off her black zipper cardigan, wraps it round her fist, stands on the toilet seat, and punches at the lock of a hatch in the ceiling. A sudden jolt of turbulence disguises the noise. She climbs up into the shallow, curved attic space, clambers to an access panel, and opens the catch with a coin from her pocket. Inside is a huge patch panel, with banks of labeled wires like an old-fashioned telephone exchange.
Hey! Hey!
I'll be right out!
Carl sticks her head down through the hatch to call back to Carson. She searches through the labels, pulls a jack from its socket, and patches another jack into its place. All the emergency oxygen masks drop from the ceiling. People grab for the yellow face masks and clamp them over their mouths. Flight attendants come rushing out of the rest areas and galleys wearing portable oxygen masks.
All right, everyone, please place your mask over your nose and mouth. Breathe normally.
They're tangled up.
Everyone, please give me your attention. There's no need to panic. Place the mask over your nose and mouth and use the straps on either side to tighten it.
Carson grabs a mask that's hanging by the toilets. Kyle pulls out another wire, strips off its casing, and touches it to a nearby jack. All the cabin lights and video screens go out. Only flashes from the wing navigation lights occasionally shine through the darkness.
Okay. It's all right, ma'am. Stay back in your seat, sir.
Kyle slips out of the toilet. The emergency strips of lighting along the aisle floors come on. She runs towards the front of the aircraft.
Stay in your seat,
Now, please take your seat and fasten your seatbelt. Thank you.
Carson doesn't see her. Elias the American grabs Abayad. The two Arabs in the center block grab him and a fight starts. In the forward galley, Kyle removes a food trolley from a lift and crawls inside. The lift descends. Carson watches the fight powerlessly.
Where is she?
Rich comes up to Carson.
We don't need a mask. We haven't lost pressure.
Where is she?
They run to the toilet cubicle. It's empty. Kyle glances around the shiny steel walls of the cramped food trolley lift as it descends.
Julia!
She steps out into a storage area loaded with food trolleys.
Julia!
Beyond the trolleys is a wall of tall freight containers. She climbs up it and crawls on over the containers. There's a gap in the containers ahead of her. She looks down. There's a Mercedes saloon car strapped to a pallet. Kyle drops down onto the bonnet and slaps on the windscreen. She disappears and returns with a steel bar. She smashes the windscreen, levering out the entire windscreen with the steel bar. She crawls in through the hole and searches for the boot release catch. The boot pops open. There's nothing inside. Kyle climbs the metal containers on the other side of the car and carries on crawling along the narrow gap between the tops of the containers and the ceiling of the cargo bay. Abruptly, she stops. Below is the black funeral casket strapped to the floor. She clambers down. She punches in the security code. It doesn't open.
I'm right here, baby. Hold on. Just wait. Mommy's here, baby.
The lock releases. She undoes the three red straps and heaves on the lid.
No.
It's David's body.
David.
She sinks to her knees. Gazing into the casket.
I'm so scared, honey.
A pocket of turbulence jolts the plane.
I can't find the baby. I don't know where she is. But no one will help me. No one's gonna help me. I can't even see her.
Turn around.
She stands and grabs the casket lid.
No!
Carson raises a gun.
I'm not done looking yet.
Yeah, you are. Let's go.
What's he doing? There's 2 hours left.
We're descending, okay? That's what pilots do when there's an out-of-control passenger on board.
Fine. The sooner we land, then the sooner we can clear the airplane, and I can keep searching. Mm-hmm. I haven't checked avionics yet. I haven't checked the crew quarters yet.
Well, those places have already been searched.
Yeah, but I haven't searched them.
They go, leaving the coffin lid open.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you may have noticed, we've begun to descend now. We are going to be making an unscheduled stop when we have the crew. I'd like to apologize for any delays.
I don't know. Guys, sit down. There she comes. Okay.
Carson and Kyle travel up in the trolley lift leading to the lounge bar.
How come there's only one coffin down there? Huh? If my daughter had died with my husband, I'd be flying two coffins home, wouldn't I? Wouldn't I?
You know what? I don't know. And I don't care. You just scared the shit out of 400 passengers, people who didn't plan on spending the night in Newfoundland.
My daughter's alive. You know she's alive. You know she's on this plane.
He looks her in the eyes.
Why didn't anybody see her?
They clamber out of the cramped lift.
Please, look, there's not that many places left to search. I just need the plane deboarded when we land.
You're gonna be arrested when we land.
He takes her by the elbow and leads her out of the galley, back through the forward half of the upper deck cabin. People stare and move out of the way.
Hold on to it this time, huh?
As they pass through the narrow toilet corridor, Captain Rich is checking the hatch access to the roof space. He watches her being led by.
About time.
In the rear half of the upper coach cabin, Obeid stands and stares as she is led past. His companion, Ahmed, joins in the applause, as does one of the other Arabs. Elias, the stocky American with the moustache, conspicuously declines to join in. Carson leads her past the rows of hostile eyes. She hesitates by row 26, but Carson ushers her towards the back of the cabin and the empty rows just forward of the crew station, the toilets, and the spiral staircase. As Kyle takes the window seat, Carson stares back at the passengers, his face professionally neutral, then sits down next to her. People gradually settle down in their seats.
If you let them arrest me, she's gone forever.
Kyle is looking straight ahead. Carson glances at her, and she turns, holding his eye. He looks down.
I'm the only one to save her. Please. I'm begging you.
He looks back up at her, and then turns to face front again. Kyle stares at Carson's profile. His features give away nothing. Then he looks back up the aisle towards the flight attendant, Stephanie.
Ma'am?
She comes up, looking at Carson as if he's just another passenger.
Sir.
Carson stares ahead, pensively.
I need to talk to the captain for a moment. Can you sit here until I get back?
Sir, we're descending. All passengers have to
stay
in their
seats. I'm sorry. It's a security matter. She won't be any trouble.
He stands, obliging her to take his place. Reluctantly, Stephanie sits, facing straight ahead. She doesn't see the inscrutable look that Carson gives Kyle, who stares back, trying to fathom its meaning. Carson comes through the lounge galley and draws the curtain, separating it from coach class. He puts on his jacket and with narrowed eyes looks into the galley at the lifts that lead down to the trolley storage, then closes the curtains that separate the galley from the lounge bar. Closes the serving door to the bar and the curtains on the opposite aisle. Moments later, he steps out of the lift into the hold. In the cabin, Stephanie looks across at Kyle. She's covering her face with her manacled hands.
Are you hurt?
No.
She presses her clenched hands to her mouth.
Did you eat anything?
Kyle turns to her.
What part of the plane did you search?
I'm sorry?
When we had the crew search for my daughter. Where were you?
Stephanie stares for a moment.
I'm very sorry for your loss, ma'am.
Her face resumes its professionally neutral expression. Kyle looks at her for a moment. Then a thought strikes her. In the hold, Carson comes up to David's casket and rips away a section of the lid lining. He removes two packages, each the size of a pack of butter, two smaller black boxes, and a brass case the size of a large cigarette lighter. He opens it and checks the electrical circuitry within before slipping it into his jacket along with the other items. Carson casts a vaguely interested look at David's face, then shuts the casket. He climbs on it and crawls through a hatch in the reinforced bulkhead. It leads into the avionics area Stephanie checked. He walks past the tall cabinets across the steel mesh floor, taking the packets out of his pockets, then jumps onto the deck that looks down into the nose cone. He attaches one of the small black boxes to each of the two oblong packets labeled Demolition Block Composition C4, then looks down into the nose cone. Hidden by the foremost bulkhead, Julia lies curled in a ball. Carson attaches the two small bombs to the bulkhead and opens the brass case. He arms the detonator, slips the brass case back into his pocket, and steps out of the nose cone, climbing through the hatch in the reinforced bulkhead through to the cargo hold. Julia's eyelids flutter, but she sleeps on. In the cockpit...
What does she want? $50 million. Transferred into that account. Or they blow up the plane.
Captain Rich looks up sharply.
They. She has an accomplice on board. She won't say who it is, but that's who's holding the detonator. They want the plane deboarded on the tarmac, passengers first, then the crew. And they want a G3, fueled and waiting.
So all that searching for the little girl is just a...
Well, she's disturbed. Christ's sake, she used her husband's coffin to get the explosives on board. And as for the little girl, I don't know. Maybe she killed them both.
Rich looks at Carson in astonishment.
I want to speak to her.
She doesn't want that. She was explicit on that point. No approaches by any member of the crew. Now listen. Listen.
The captain turns back.
I don't get the feeling that she wants to hurt anyone. I never heard of a hijacker letting passengers deboard before. My recommendation? So you ask the airline to wire the money. Notify me when the transfer's been made. Okay? Let's keep her thinking she's in control. We'll land. We'll get everyone deboarded. Then we take her down.
The forward upper cabin falls silent as Carson walks towards the back of the plane.
Mr. Carson.
He steps into the galley. It's Stephanie.
What are you doing?
I am not sitting back there anymore.
You what?
Jean, she knows.
Does she know?
She knows the kids in avionics. She knows that I'm a part of this. The second you walked away, she
said... Did she say anything to you about avionics?
No.
Did you?
No.
Then why are you panicking? Everything is working out just like we wanted it to. No, even better. I mean, she has half the plane believing we have Arab terrorists on board. It's priceless.
She's putting things together, Jean. I can see it.
What difference does it make? She's going to be dead 10 minutes after we land. They're going to find her with a bullet hole through her head and a detonator in her hand. Hasn't this all been explained to you 1,000 times? The only piece of evidence that matters is about this high. Her name is Julia, and she is going to get vaporized. Now, it is all working. Get it together.
Stephanie steps away and past him.
Okay, look. Something goes wrong when we land.
Mr. Carson?
Fiona steps in.
Captain might get a call.
Oh, thank you.
Fiona goes. Stephanie smiles coolly as she returns to the back of the plane.
Yes, Captain.
The money's been wired. I have a confirmation number. You have a pen?
I do.
Carson takes out a pen to take down the confirmation number.
Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the seatbelt sign as we prepare for our final descent. Please return your seat to its full upright position.
Thank you. I can handle it from here.
Stephanie gets up from the aisle seat next to Kyle. Carson kneels on the window seat of the row in front and undoes Kyle's handcuffs.
I don't understand.
Cuffs for people who pose a threat. Right.
Now we're putting down in Goose Bay, Newfoundland. The FBI is en route.
I've notified them that we have a missing person situation on board.
Kyle listens eagerly.
They'll clear the plane. Every passenger on board will be detained and questioned. Two agents will come on board and help us look for him.
And what about the crew? Will they be detained, questioned?
I have no idea how happy I'm going to be to hand this case over.
He sits down in front of her.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Carson faces forward, his face betraying no emotion. Kyle fastens her seatbelt and looks out of the window. The clouds part to reveal, in the darkness, the snow and hills of Labrador, Canada. Other passengers crane their necks to look.
Where the hell are we?
Rhett and Britton, his father, takes a photograph out of the window with his flash camera.
Wow. It's back.
The enormous plane turns onto final approach, and the runway lights of Goose Bay Airport swing into view. The wheels touch down on the tarmac. The aircraft rolls to a stop, dwarfing everything around it. Much bigger than a jumbo jet, its upper deck, from which Carson, Kyle, and the other passengers look down at the approaching buses and motorized staircase, is the height of a four-story building. As security vehicles take positions in front of the nose of the aircraft, a helicopter hovers overhead.
All units, incident command. The suspect will be escorted off the plane by a flight marshal. Confirm, Victor 1 standing by to provide transport.
Carson turns to Kyle.
Just keep quiet. And don't want to antagonize anybody. These people expect you to be arrested by now.
The passengers start to file out of the cabin, leaving just Carson and Kyle in their seats. A Bayhead turns to look at the two figures in the back row. Rhett and Brittany climb down to the lower deck, squabbling to the last.
Go. Move.
The two flight attendants, Fiona and Katerina, are the last to leave. In the deserted upper cabin, a couple of dangling face masks hiss compressed air. Carson looks around.
Okay. The crew's gonna deboard now. Another couple minutes, the plane will be all yours.
The captain and co-pilot walk to the stairs.
Where are you going?
I need to talk to
you. Hey, you have to stay back here.
You gotta make sure that nothing gets taken off the plane, okay? No food carts, no trash cans. Like, it's really important that the plane stays sealed.
Well, I don't really have the option to say no. Do I?
Kyle looks puzzled as Captain Rich bitterly turns away. As he and his co-pilot climb down to the lower deck, Carson watches Kyle edgily.
Okay, let's sit down.
Kyle runs down the stairs.
Captain! Damn it! Captain! Captain!
Ignoring her, Captain Rich walks on to the exit door.
What's it for you, boarding?
He nods to his crew.
Captain, look. I know I broke the law. I know I disrupted your flight. In a couple of minutes, we're gonna find my daughter.
The crew can deboard now, Captain.
We're gonna find my daughter. And you're gonna owe her an apology.
Rich turns back from the door.
Enough. Miss Pratt, your money has been wired, just as you asked. A G3 is waiting, just as you asked. Perhaps we can do without the pretense of the missing child now.
What?
Wait here. I'll get them.
Get who?
The agents. Wait here.
Carson walks out of the aircraft onto the mobile staircase, buttoning up his coat. Kyle runs to the top of the steps. She sees the waiting vehicles. The crew of the small G3 getaway jet raise their hands to show they're unarmed. A bus takes the last of the passengers. Armed police stand next to vehicles saying, "Bomb squad." Carson is halfway down the staircase. Kyle's eyes widen in sudden comprehension.
Carson!
He stops, one foot on the tarmac, staring straight ahead.
You get off the plane when I say you get off the plane!
He turns and looks back up at her. He takes the detonator from his pocket so only she can see it. They stand staring at each other. Kyle, in only the t-shirt she wore under her zipper cardigan, shivers in the bitter wind. Carson makes his way slowly back up the staircase, stopping where he knows only Kyle can hear him.
You want to play? Let's play.
I want my daughter.
Deport the crew, and we'll talk about it. Or you can go back there and tell them that I'm the hijacker. Who knows, maybe they'll believe you.
Maybe I'll tell them what you've got in your pocket.
Go ahead. The first one to go will be your daughter.
He gives her a grim smile. They eyeball each other. Just inside the aircraft, the flight attendants nervously pass between Kyle on one side of the door and Carson and the captain on the other. Another bus draws up close to the bottom of the mobile staircase. The whole time the flight attendants are filing past, Kyle has her eyes riveted on Carson's face. He looks back without expression. As Captain Rich steps forward to follow the last of his crew, he glances at Kyle.
Will that be all?
No. Give me your gun.
Unblinking, Carson brings out the gun tucked into the back of his waistband. He passes it over to Rich, who looks at it, then at Kyle. She holds his eye unflinchingly. He swallows.
Godspeed, Mr. Carson.
Thank you, Captain.
The captain steps outside. The door slides down behind him. Inside the plane, Carson is facing the door as he operates the mechanism.
I think you and I need to talk.
Me too.
Kyle rams a fire extinguisher into the side of his head. He drops like a stone. She searches his pockets for his handcuffs. Chaining him by one hand to a rail by the door, Kyle reaches back into his pocket for the detonator. She opens it and stares at the coils and circuitry within.
Where is she? Where'd you put her?
A shadow advances down the aisle behind her. Kyle turns, sees Stephanie holding a torch as a weapon, and gets to her feet, her mind racing.
She's in avionics, isn't she? Isn't she?
Carson pulls a gun from his ankle holster. Kyle sees and runs. He shoots through the handcuffs. He turns to Stephanie. Kyle runs to the upper deck and heads for the cockpit. Carson races up the stairs after her, bleeding. Kyle reaches the open cockpit door. She locks it. Carson hammers at the reinforced bulletproof cockpit door and puts his hand to his bleeding head. Kyle watches him through the fisheye lens peephole in the door. He reloads his gun.
Listen. It's over. Nobody is coming to help you. You're the crazy lady. So why don't you just come out of there? Nobody has to die.
My husband didn't jump off that building. He didn't fall off it either.
You're taking things too personally.
She can see him on a monitor.
We needed a coffin because they aren't x-rayed. We needed a credible hijacker who knew the plane. Those are the brakes.
Kyle goes into the pilot's bunk room. She opens a hatch into the attic space and flings a heavy flight manual as far as she can towards the rear of the plane. Carson turns and looks up at the ceiling behind him. He moves away from the cockpit door, disappearing from the monitor screen. Kyle jumps softly down onto the bunk and back into the cockpit. She looks through the peephole. The first class lounge looks empty. Cautiously, she opens the door and looks out. She steps down the short corridor that opens out into the first class lounge. That's empty too. She goes towards the staircase by the bar that leads down to the lower first class deck and tries to raise the safety shutter, but it's been locked for landing. There's a noise from further down the fuselage. Kyle looks warily through the bar towards the first part of the upper coach deck. It looks deserted. She creeps into it. The noise comes from the toilet block which separates the two halves of the upper deck and where Kyle managed to get into the attic space. She moves towards it. One of the toilet doors swings open as if kicked. Kyle, her chest heaving, looks into the cubicle just as Carson's legs disappear through the hatch. Quickly, she slips past. Carson climbs up into the attic space. Kyle runs down the stairs. Stephanie is by the exit door holding the torch. Kyle walks towards her.
You really want to kill a little girl? Huh? He wouldn't mind. I know that. The harder this gets, the more he seems to enjoy himself. But what about you? Huh?
Carson, gun drawn, searches the attic space.
What about you? You want to kill my little girl?
Kyle punches her in the face. Carson climbs back down. He slips. Kyle steps over Stephanie and runs forward. Carson has sprained his ankle. Stephanie gets to her feet, her nose bleeding. As Carson hobbles down to the lower coach deck, Kyle runs through into business class, opens the door of the clothes closet, and opens the hatch through which she saw Stephanie climb down into avionics. Carson, his nose and neck covered in blood, stares along the lower coach deck. The curtain by the exit door is flapping in the wind. There's no sign of Stephanie. Kyle climbs down into avionics.
Julia!
Carson limps down the gangway towards the exit, looking out of the windows. A slim figure runs away from the aircraft, silhouetted against the snow. Stephanie turns back and looks up at Carson, standing at the top of the mobile stairs, then carries on running. Kyle searches around the tall, winking avionics cabinets, then looks towards the nose cone. She climbs down from the steel mesh platform on which the avionics cabinets stand and looks over the edge of the deck into the very point of the nose cone. Carson reaches the business class closet. He can't open the hatch. Below, Kyle climbs down the bulkhead ladder into the nose cone and gets down beside Julia, kissing and hugging her.
Honey, can you hear me? Oh, God, what did that do to you?
Carson shoots the bolt off the hatch cover. As Kyle looks up, she sees the two small bombs Carson attached to the bulkhead wall she's just climbed down. She sees a small door in the bulkhead. She opens it and pushes Julia inside as Carson climbs down into avionics. He lands awkwardly. Kyle crawls in after her daughter, looking up through the steel mesh floor at Carson.
Okay. Your husband didn't fall off the roof. He flew off. Come on. Come on up.
He doesn't see them below him.
Nobody's coming for you. You know why? Because nobody cares. You know, people will think what I tell them to think. That's how authority works. We picked her up, shoved her into the food bin, and nobody even looked up from their seat. You understand what I'm saying? Nobody cares. Nobody cares about Julia. All right, it's over. Let's finish it. All right.
As he clambers forward to the edge of the platform, behind him, Kyle climbs out from under it, opens the hatch in the reinforced bulkhead to the cargo hold, pushes Julia inside, and climbs in after her.
We'll be safe back here, honey.
Carson jumps down from the mesh platform onto the deck. He looks over the edge to where the bombs are strapped in the nose cone. It's empty. He falls to his knees. Behind him, Kyle opens the reinforced hatch from the cargo hold and shows him the detonator.
What are you gonna do? You gonna blow us up?
No, just you.
As he fires at her, she slams the hatch shut and detonates the bomb. Carson is blown to pieces as a fireball blossoms through the bottom of the aircraft's nose.
Good Lord, you did it.
The nose wheel collapses and the front of the plane topples onto the tarmac.
Dispatch, this is FBI Ground 1. The coordinates back to their outer markers.
The front of the aircraft is obscured by smoke, and a small fire has started close to where the mobile steps were wrenched from the toppling fuselage. Slowly, the forward cargo hatch opens and lowers to the ground. The aircrew watch, stunned, as Kyle walks out of the smoke, carrying Julia in her arms.
Oh my God, she's...
What is she holding?
She's holding her daughter.
Captain Rich is dumbfounded. Fiona and Estelle watch open-mouthed as Kyle walks steadily towards them.
Her daughter.
The emergency services head for the plane.
All ground is through the inner perimeters. Let's go, people. Go, go, go!
Captain Rich watches as fire trucks and bomb disposal teams race towards his aircraft. The circling helicopters swoop in. Kyle walks towards the approaching vehicles. She looks up into the searchlight of the circling helicopters and puts a protective hand over her daughter's head. The vehicles come to a stop just in front of her, red and blue lights flashing, headlights glaring. Later, in a hangar cluttered with suitcases from the aircraft, passengers and crew are interviewed by teams of FBI investigators. Kyle sits cradling Julia in her arms, the little girl still in a drug-induced sleep. Captain Rich comes up to her.
She looks like you.
She looks up at him.
Yeah, there's a little bit of her dad in there too.
Captain Rich lowers his eyes for a moment.
I'm sorry.
Kyle nods faintly, and the captain lowers his eyes again. Kyle looks beyond him, further into the hangar, and her eyes darken. Stephanie, in handcuffs, is led out of the hangar by an FBI officer. She doesn't look at Kyle as she passes her.
Miss Pratt? Our office in Berlin has detained the morgue director. They'd like you to ID a picture of him.
Can it wait?
Surprised, Kyle looks up at Captain Rich and their eyes meet. The officer nods and goes.
Sure.
The captain looks at Kyle, nods briefly, and walks away.
The van's here, ma'am. Whenever you're ready.
Kyle picks up her daughter and carries Julia past the watching passengers towards the vehicle. People crane their heads to see.
I told you there was a little girl.
She never gave up.
As they reach the back of the van, Julia's head stirs.
Mommy. Hey. Hey.
Kyle sits her in the van.
Hey. Hi, honey.
Mommy.
Yeah, I'm right here. Mommy's right here, baby.
Julia gazes at her sleepily.
Are we there yet?
Not yet, but almost.
Carl presses her lips to her daughter's forehead.
Open up.
As she helps Julia into her seat, a Bayed steps away from a group of passengers, picks up Julia's flight bag, and hands it to her. They exchange a look, and she nods her thanks. The vehicle drives out of the hangar into the dazzling dawn light. This audio description was written and produced by Stephen Dobbin at IMS, DVD production by Aquarium. Directed by Robert Schwentke, written by Peter A. Dowling and Billy Ray, edited by Tom Noble, production designer Alexander Hammond, director of photography Florian Ballhaus. Executive producers James Whittaker, Charles J.D. Schlissel, Robert DiNozzi, and Erica Huggins. Unit production manager Lee Shanter, first assistant director Jonathan Watson, second assistant director Ryan Craig, visual effects supervisor Rob Hodgson, associate producer Sarah Bowen. The cast: Kyle was played by Jodie Foster, Carson by Peter Sarsgaard, Captain Rich, Sean Bean, Stephanie, Kate Bean. Obeyed: Michael Irby, Ahmed Asif Cohen, Fiona Erica Christensen, Mr. Loud Shane Edelman, Mrs. Loud Mary Gallagher, Brittany Loud Haley Ram, Rhett Loud Forrest Landis, Claudia Jana Kolesarova, Elias Brent Sexton, Julia Marlene Norston, Estella Judith Scott, David John Benjamin Hickey, Eric Matthew Bomer, FBI agent Gavin Grazer, Mike Christopher Gartin, Katerina Bess Wall, Grunick Kirk B.R. Waller, Anna, Stephanie Farrisee, Mortuary Director, Christian Burkle, West, Cooper Thornton. Metal Detector Guard 1, Klaus Schindler. Ion Tracer Guard 1, Eva Plackner. Irene, Amanda Brooks. Row 19, Male Passenger, Jesse Birch. Therapist, Greta Skarke. Main Deck Kid, Drake Johnson. Main Deck Grandma, Lois Hall. Helicopter Pilot, Dirk Varley. Stunt Coordinator, Jill Stokesbury. Stunt Players, Tony Dono, Megan Godfrey, Kim Koschke, and Lynn Salvatore. ADR Group Talent: Terry Douglas, June Christopher, Kathleen Gatti, Sariana Jacqueline, Annie Lockhart, Wendy E. Cutler, Bridget Hoffman, Bettina Speer, Phil Proctor, Ruben Neubauer, Kurt Lowens, David Cowgill, Paul Pape, Riff Hutton, Matt Lindquist, Kai Wolf, Hans Tester, Daniel A. Katz, supervising sound editor Dave McMoyler, re-recording mixers Michael Minkler and Myron Nettinger, ADR supervisor Chris Jargo, sound designer John Title MPSE, Foley supervisor Hector Geeker MPSE, sound effects editors Kerry Ann Carmian, Dina DiMuro MPSE, Danny Hagelman, Mandel Winter. Dialogue editors Michael Hertline MPSE and Karen Vassar, ADR editor Michelle Patzer, first assistant sound editor John Cannon, digital sound assistant Derek Lee Bell, Foley artists James Moriana, Jeffrey Wilhoit, ADR mixer Robert Deschain, CAS, ADR recordist Tammy Treadwell, Foley mixer Nerses Gesalayan, sound editorial engineer John Beres, additional audio Paul Poduska, David Young, ADR group voice casting Terry Douglas, re-recorded at Todd AO, sound editorial services Sound Deluxe. Soundtrack available on Hollywood Records. Location manager Brianna Burke. Sound mixer Robert E. Eber. Sound utility Michael Messero. Costume supervisor Linda Matthews. Assistant costume supervisor Jessica Peel. Hair department head Deborah Ann Piper. Hairstylists Camille Langer, Shana Fruman, Nancy Cascio, Anna Olenta Spira. Hair for Jodie Foster, Frances Mathias. Key makeup Tara Day. Makeup for Jodie Foster, Julie Hewitt. Supervising music editor Dick Bernstein. Music editor Philip Talman. Assistant music editor Barbara McDermott. Music recorded and mixed by Simon Rhodes. Orchestrations by James Horner, John Cull, Conrad Pope, Kevin Kleisch. Ethnic woodwinds Tony Hinnigan. Music score supervisor Sylvia Wells. Score recorded and mixed at Todd Scoring Stage, Studio City, California. Assistant engineer Tom Hardesty. Music preparation Bob Bornstein. German Unit Production Supervisor, Berlin, Michel Dateriv. Unit Production Manager, Markus Loges. Additional First Assistant Director, Richard Stiles. Second Assistant Director, Thorn Muttert. The producers wish to thank BE Aerospace. Footage courtesy of ESPN Enterprises. Kenny the Shark footage, courtesy of Discovery Communications. Amsterdam footage, courtesy of Producers Library. Audiovisual programs, courtesy of BBC Worldwide. TWI footage, courtesy of Transworld International. Flight plan software footage by Rockwell Collins. German production services by Studio Hamburg International Productions, GmbH. Camera provided by Claremont Camera. Camera and lenses furnished by Hollywood Camera Inc. Camera cranes, dollies and remote camera systems by Chapman Leonardo Studio Equipment Inc. Remote camera systems by Panavision Remote Systems. Prints by Technicolor. Camera and lenses by Arriflex. Film by Kodak. Sony Dynamic Digital Sound, Dolby Digital, and DTS Digital Sound. All available at selected theaters. This motion picture was created by First Class Production Inc. for purposes of copyright law in the United Kingdom. Distributed by Buena Vista Pictures Distribution. Touchstone Pictures.